Welcome back to the Weekly Manga Podcast. This is the podcast where we talk about all of your favorite ongoing Japanese manga. This week, we're going to cover the controversial Drama Queen, chapters 1 and 2. Look forward to some spicy takes there. And also, we're going to catch up on One Piece chapter 1133 with a touching reunion, almost 800 chapters in the making. All that manga news and more coming right up. Hello again, my name is Bruce. I'm the proprietor of the White Gray Black YouTube channel. This week, I am joined again by my constant co-host, Gautam.
Hello, hello.
Special shout out and thanks, of course, to our Patreon subscribers, Yaji Black. And if you want to have your name read at the top of the episode, see some bonus content, check out patreon.com/WGBmanga. It's only $3 to start. All right, Gautam, let's get into this controversial little manga that came out last week. Had chapter 2 this week, so we got a couple of pictures from both of those. This is called Drama Queen by an author named Kuraku Ichikawa. This is his first serialized work, I believe. I think he had one shot before this, which I've not read. There's been some chat about this. Gautam, tell me, I guess, without talking about the, how do I say it? Without talking about the interesting parts of it, how did you feel about Drama Queen?
Without talking about the interesting parts of it, huh? Yeah, I don't know.
Or can you even talk about it without mentioning the sort of...
No, yeah, you can't,
I guess you
right?
can't. Like, yeah, I guess you can't.
Drama Queen is a... had a very weird first chapter, just to preface. It wasn't uninteresting. It was an interesting first chapter.
Yeah.
We are still not sure of the author's intent. So I think let's do it this way. Let's like recap chapter one and then let's talk about what we think on it.
Cool. Yeah. It's not super deep at a level, essentially, kind of alt future, alt history, if you want to call it that.
Alt-right.
Years. Yeah, probably. Alt history, alt-right. Anyways, 9 years since aliens saved the Earth. Our main character here, whose name doesn't even matter, she does not like aliens. In fact, this is maybe the most incriminating page, so I think we'll come back to this, but she gets bumped by these aliens on the street. She gets mad at them. She works, her boss is an alien at work. She doesn't like him. Everyone else seems to really like the aliens. Yeah, we see here the alien population in Japan has exceeded 17 million, surpassing 60,000 in Sendo City alone. Sendo City is where our characters live. As today marks the start of a new universe week, we interviewed several locals. This is the news going on in the background. Yeah, everyone else seems to like the aliens. Lead girl does not. Here we go. Here are the names. Nomamoto and Kitami. They work together. They meet each other. They learn and connect over the fact that they both hate aliens. She says, I wish they'd all just disappear. Something that's bugging me ain't right. Right? She thinks something ain't right. She hates this.
And I like how obtuse her hatred is. It's like, she's like, sure they saved us. Sure they gave us new technology. Yeah. But something isn't right and I hate them. It's like,
yeah.
You don't even have like a solid reason.
Yeah, she doesn't. And she kind of says that earlier, right? She kind of says like, I don't really know why I hate them. I just hate them. It doesn't feel right. Which is interesting, and who knows? They go kind of fishing together and chat about it. Kitami, the guy, he says, is that his name, right? Yeah, Kitami. Yeah. Kitami's like, oh, yeah, you know, I had a sister. This guy's whole family was killed by aliens. They were celebrating her acceptance into high school. One of the family cars, when their fancy cars came flying in reverse, I'm sure it was a drunk. He doesn't know. I'm sure it was a drunk driver. The culprit got away and the police didn't even try looking. So that's kind of their origin backstories. One person hates aliens. We don't know why. The other person hates aliens because there was a freak car accident when he was little that killed his whole family.
Real quick in that page, he says like a drunk driver presumably came in reverse, but that is not a reverse. That's a head-on collision between two cars.
I think
they're
so.
They're both facing
Yeah, I saw some other people point this out, and they point this out because there's a little bit more of this in chapter two. This is probably just a translation mix-up. It came flying in reverse could have mean, like, the word here, I think, could mean, like, driving the wrong way, right? Like, a wrong way accident, which could be translated as reverse accident, or...
Oh, I see.
I think that's... I think that's just a translation thing. I don't think this is a... This...
Like, misremembering.
Or like, an unreliable drama. Narrator yeah. thing. Like, I don't... This series has not told me that it's smart enough to do that yet. Maybe it is. I don't think so. I don't think this is some deep, like, I thought they were in reverse, but we're going to show it not being in reverse because, you know, his memories are bad or something like that. I think this is just a translation thing in this case.
Got it. Let's presume it's a translation
thing. Yeah, I think that's...
Unless proven otherwise. But one thing to note is that there's always streaks in the sky.
Yes. Yeah, basically in every shot there's these space... ships, I would assume, flying around in the sky.
I thought it might have been like detritus from the meteors, but I think you're right. It is spaceships. They say it's countless spaceships. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah. That makes sense.
But so they both, and they kind of theorize, like, sometimes I wonder, like, was there even a giant meteor heading for Earth to begin with, right? Like, these aliens are here, sort of predicated on the idea that there was a meteor coming for Earth and we saved you from it. And, you know, we want to live here now. Like maybe they staged the whole thing so they could pull off a peaceful invasion. You know, this is sort of Kitami's idea. They then make little sand aliens and kick them around and seem really happy doing it. The art in the series is good. Like regardless of anything else that's going on here, which is nefarious or poorly informed.
It's nebulous at the very least.
Yeah. Or unclear. I think the art in the series is pretty good. So yeah, Kitami shows up at Makoto's door. What was her fucking name? I'm going to get her name right. Sorry. Nomamoto. He shows up at Nomamoto's door with a dead alien and is like, I don't know. I just kind of lost control and killed an alien.
Yeah. I just did a murder.
He whacked me right in the face. It's like the next thing I knew, I'd beaten him to death. Like, this is not like, hold on. This is not normal. I don't know. Beat him to death. I never heard of any other cases, but I bet it's punishable by death. If you commit murder, it's only natural to be punished. And so they basically be like, okay, what are they going to do? This is the other thing is they both are kind of thinking about it. They're like, he's like, well, I don't really feel bad because I don't see the aliens as people. And he's like, you're the same, right? Nomamoto. And she's essentially like, correct. I hate them. They are not people. They do not deserve the same respect or whatever. They then decide that the best way to get rid of the alien is to eat it, which is interesting. And Nomamoto thinks they taste delicious, and Kitami does not, which is maybe an interesting thing for chapter one, right? Or for chapter two, I guess it gets a little different.
They essentially seal the contract where Kitami is going to murder aliens and Nomamoto is going to hide the evidence by eating them.
Yeah.
And that's like the deal.
That's the setup. The setup is there are aliens. It's kind of unclear, was it a staged thing or are we kind of following the bad guys or are we going to get a reversal of, I don't know. And that's kind of the big problem with chapter one for me really here is that if...
Is the author hoping that we perceive these two as good guys?
Well,
like, are these the protagonists? Like, are these two set up to be like, oh, the aliens were bad all along? And we're right in killing and eating them, right?
Yeah,
I don't know what the intent is.
Definitely the intent definitely from the start is that you are supposed to feel and connect with the two main characters, right? This is, even when you have an anti-hero or something in media, this is almost universally true, right? You can meet a really bad dude, but you're going to, you know, pretty quickly connect with him and be like, oh man, he's a bad dude, but he's cool to watch. We're pretty quickly in the sort of the opening pages, right? Like she gets bumped into like, oh, that she was transgressed against, right? Like this is kind of an opposite tool of something like, the cat in a tree, right? Cat in a tree is the most classic way to introduce your character and show them as a good person is you present them with a problem that any normal good person would seek to solve. You put the cat in a tree. If the main character saves the cat out of the tree, you immediately know in the opening pages that they're a good person. this is kind of the opposite of that, where you show someone being like trod upon or looked down upon, and you sympathize with that person because, oh, they're being transgressed against. Something is going bad for them. I feel bad for them. I have a pity and a sympathy for them. A different kind of sympathy than this is a good person, but there's a sympathy for Namamoto here, because literally this is like the second or third page of the whole series, and it's like, oh, people are just bumping into her. They shouldn't do that. So and also the same with Kitami's backstory, right? Like, you are supposed to feel like these are the people you are supposed to feel bad for the things that have happened to them, feel bad for their situations, and you're supposed to feel, I think what my read of chapter one is, that you are supposed to feel that their rage is justified in some way. Maybe not all the way, but in some way you are supposed to say, these people, her boss abuses her, people bump into her on the street, they don't care about her, and this guy lost his family to these aliens, and they're both uncomfortable in the world they're living. You're supposed to sympathize with these characters. That's where I end up at the end of chapter one.
I see how we're supposed to be sympathetic, which is why it makes it a little bit confusing, yes. Because I didn't feel sympathy, right?
And then, well, and that leads to the problem, right? Is that
their bads outweigh what they deserve sympathy for, you know? Yes.
And this is, well, and this is where things get confusing, unclear, and potentially troublesome, right? Is, okay, you are trying to get me to connect with these two characters. The options here that I see presented of where this story could go. Let's talk about the sort of best choice that this story could go. I think the best place this story could go is, the aliens are not evil. The aliens are maybe, you know, a little clumsy or a little weird. But what we're watching is essentially two completely evil characters trying to take out, you know, good aliens. And what we're slowly going to sort of come to realize over the serialization of this is that, oh, you know, you made me sympathize with these characters in the beginning, but there is a, you know, a reasonable foil to them, which is kind of yet to be introduced. Maybe it's this guy at the end of chapter two. But the thing that the story needs in order for us to sort of know, like, hey, these are the bad guys, is you need a reasonable foil to say, like, oh, this guy's actually on the right side and these guys are on the wrong side. And you have to contrast those. And that does not happen in chapter one. So
let's use Death Note as an example, right?
Exactly.
Because yeah. I think it's actually a pretty apt example, because Light Yagami, right, is very much, he's the protagonist, but he's evil, right? He's a egomaniac who is deciding who lives and dies. But his goal to rid the world of crime and terrible people is something that other people can rally behind. Yeah. You know, I could see people saying, oh, Light Yagami was right.
There are lots of people who do. I have seen that argument across the internet for 15 years, that Light Yagami was right. So
totally. And they're wrong, but I can see where they're coming from. Right. Because he is ridding the world of terrible people and dropping crime statistics mm-hmm. all across the globe. I can see that argument here. I don't see anyone outside of racists saying our main characters are right.
Yeah.
Because, oh, and let's address the elephant in the room. It's like, it's very clear that the aliens just represent immigrants or people of different culture entering their space.
Yeah. I don't think it's super clear, but I think there's a lot of little hints that
it let me, I, way I think too it's, analogous
I think it's not, more clear than other I, options
yeah I to me, in my eyes, it's like that's what it represents. But either way, it's impossible to side with these guys if you are a well-adjusted person, which makes it
Which is weird, because the author is trying to get you to sympathize with. So if you look at it, like you're saying, from this sort of logical, zoomed out point of view, these people are just bad and like they're just evil. They just kill aliens and eat them, and they have no regrets for it. We're watching evil people do evil things.
Yeah.
And then you zoom and you read the chapter and you're like, but the chapter is trying to get me to relate to them. So you think, okay, maybe anti-hero, maybe they're going to change over time. I don't. Let's talk about this page, because to me, this page is the biggest display of this series not being what I described its best version could be, where these people are evil and they sort of we're watching the bad guys as our main characters, and there'll be a foil to them who will maybe change one of them or not the other.
Real quick, before we do, I will say that I think that what's the guy? Itsuki. I forgot the guy's name.
Kitami.
Kitami. Kitami's. I think he is. If I can sympathize with either, and I can't, I think I could sympathize with him because he had a traumatic experience and he's fueled by trauma and perpetuating a cycle of violence. That I can understand more than Namamoto, who is a psychopath.
Yeah, for sure.
Anyway, go on.
So this page has a lot of troublesome things in it. You're going to hear me use the word dog whistle. This is basically what this is there's certain things you can say in a conversation or in a post or whatever that are not, they don't seem that directly bad if you just kind of read them on their own, but, or I guess reading them on their own does seem bad, but like putting them in the context of like, oh, the character just kind of said a random thing. I want to point out two things here. One is she's talking about how much she hates aliens. And she says, just like I hate women who call their boyfriends their partner. That, why is this written into the story?
I think it's just to perpetuate her viewpoint as a bigot.
I agree, partially. I also think if you're trying to present your two main characters as they're evil, they're bad, the aliens are fine, these two people are bad people, why use this sort of, I don't even want to say politically charged, this kind of socially charged thing where this is like a, almost like a gender attack, like kind of thing where it's like, who cares? Like I know tons of people who have talked about their partner and it's a woman with a boyfriend or a boy with a girlfriend and they call them their partner. Like that's who cares? Like that's not an important thing.
She hates how woke society has gotten.
Exactly. Yeah. This is essentially an quote unquote, I will say anti-woke dog whistle is what we're reading right here. And the thing that worries me is that you would not put this in your manga if you were, I don't think you would put this in your manga if you did not agree with the words on the page, because here's the thing, because it does not really apply to anything else in the story, right? This women who call their boyfriends their partner thing, it's not about aliens. It's not about this, you know, potential xenophobia that is likely true. It's not about, you know, invading people. It's not about any of that. It's just this weird anti-woke dog whistle stuck in here in the early pages for no reason. And if you're a normal person and you don't care about stuff like this, why would you use this to paint your character as a bad person? I think it's to
say, oh, she is a racist nut job, and that's the only reason.
But this isn't racist.
It's bigotry, right? I think it's there to represent that she is closed-minded as a person. Because her reasoning for hating the aliens is like, I don't know, just don't feel right in my gut. It's like, okay, that's nothing. You said nothing, right?
You're right, but I also think, I just think that there's 100 other ways you could show that this character was close-minded, that this character, you know, didn't like some other, you know, aspect of the aliens being here or some aspect of people who buddy up to aliens. This is so specific, right? This reads to me as such a specific call out. Like I'm trying to think of like a good comparison. Like imagine if this said something like, oh, I hate him. Just like I hate boys going into girls' bathrooms, pretending to be trans. Like if they said something like that, you would be like, whoa, that's like out of nowhere. Like, why would you just call out this random thing? And to me, this sticks out almost as much, right? Because this is not about xenophobia. This is not about the aliens in the story. It's just, oh, I hate women who call their boyfriends their partner. And I get that
it's maybe a bit too on the nose.
It's so on the nose. And it's not, again, this is not the kind of thing you would ever think about or bring up in trying to paint your character as a bad person, unless it was on your mind for some other reason. That's kind of my big point here.
Well, I think the author is probably on like the side of not racism. If I had to guess, I don't know for sure.
That's a scary thing. I don't know.
but I think it is just a clumsy attempt at portraying Namamoto as a bigot.
Yeah.
And it's on the nose because it's clumsy and not well written. But I think it's more so the author is trying to paint her as a bigot who is an unreliable narrator. More so than the author is saying, oh, I actually hate this in society. But the problem is,
yeah,
I'm not 100% on that. It could be either. Yeah. I just think it is probably the former.
and that's kind of the biggest deal of this, right? Is that we've kind of given a little bit of grace and talked about, like, well, you know, the best case scenario and how it could go down if this was a really talented writer who would, you know, subvert our expectations and develop these characters as evil with a foil. I haven't seen anything in the two chapters published here that lead me to believe that this is a skilled, talented, complex writer who is writing some new different thing. Do you agree? This doesn't feel like anything special. This doesn't feel like there's a whole lot hidden. Maybe, you know, maybe it's hidden that, oh yeah, the aliens are the invaders. You know, maybe they, they did fake the asteroid thing or whatever. That's like the only sort of like, well, maybe if this is true, then it all kind of makes sense. But.
And just to phrase the biggest question that makes or breaks this thing, what is the author's intent? Is the author intending for us to relate to these characters and say, hey, they're right, fuck these aliens? Or is the author asking for us to see these people as radicals and extremists and bigots who are off their rocker and terrorizing, like, the population because they hate different culture?
Yeah.
And the answer to that really affects whether this is redeemable or not.
That's kind of the big issue, is that with something like this, I can get that maybe they are a new author who maybe doesn't understand some specifics and they're trying their best. If this was the only dog whistle in the series, I would say maybe. But look, you can go down two panels and there's another one. This one is a little bit more subtle, I think, but she says here, they clearly look down as humans. I'd probably be in trouble if I said it like that. I don't know how many times I have heard racist and xenophobes and other people like that say something like, oh, you know, well, I have my feelings about whatever, but I'd probably be in trouble if I said it out loud, or I'd probably be in trouble if I said that. This is another dog whistle on the same fucking page for the same fucking thing about.
But maybe it's the author that grew up around those kinds of people and is like representing them as like a monster on page, you know? It's like,
yeah,
I think the other side of the coin.
I agree with you. That could be the other side of the point. There's two failings here, right, in this story, which is that If what you propose is correct and that they are trying to paint these people as bad kind of people because they spent a lot of time around these sort of xenophobic, alt-right bad people, they have not clearly shown us that this is not the author's viewpoint. This is only the viewpoint of the characters, right? Which is possible to do, right? There are plenty of times, I mean, I don't think, who wrote Death Note? What was his name?
Obata and the artist. It's Obata and some other guy. I forget the other guy's name.
It seems to me pretty clear, and maybe not in chapter one. It's been forever since I've seen or read Death Note. Maybe not in chapter one, but it's pretty clear after, you know, a certain amount of time in that series that, like, the main character of Death Note is a bad guy and the authors aren't. And they paint that pretty clearly. And I think there's a lot of series like that, right? Where, I mean, Attack on Titan, you know, minor spoilers, like that ends with a main character who turns into not a good guy, who does not good things. And it's pretty clear the author is condemning what has happened in lots of ways and condemning a lot of things there. Attack on Titan is an immaculately written thing and shows us kind of the whole evolution of an anti-hero / evil character.
But here's the difference between... Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say the issue with this series so far is that they are treading upon these things that are incredibly problematic in modern day society that we need to
need to
go head on and address them. And it is unclear whether this is the author's intent or this is the author's opinion, I guess you could say, or whether this is just the character's opinion. And making it unclear to me implies to me that this is the author's point of view. Like, because I think that if you were on the other side, you said, well, I definitely don't want people to think that I agree with these characters. You would make it very clear that these characters were not to be related to, not to be endorsed, not to be supported. And like we talked about, you know, 10 minutes ago or so, the author very clearly in this chapter one wants us to support and endorse these characters. So I think that all of this, these two dog whistles on this
page, I'm not sure.
Xenophobia. Well, and again, we're back to not being sure is not a good place to leave this series. So
I agree with. And unlike Death Note is like, it doesn't matter if you side with the light or if you side with L, because that situation can never happen. Yeah. And it's also not racially charged.
That's true. Yeah.
I think the fact that this, I'm not going to say aliens can come down, but obviously the analog of living amongst different cultures is present. This is a realistic situation. So if I saw someone say, oh yeah, you know, like Namamoto is right to do all this stuff, I'd be like, yeah, you're fucking nuts. I'm not going to talk to you anymore. Whereas if somebody said, yeah, Light was right, I'd be like, okay, let's have a conversation about that. You know?
Yeah.
Like, and if at the end of the conversation they still think like Light was right, I'd be like, okay, that's fine. Like, you can have that. It's like, it's not an opinion that would shatter my belief in that person. Whereas if the person is like, yeah, I'm pro bigotry, I'd be like, okay.
Yeah.
Well, we can't talk anymore, right? Like, there's a difference there. A Death Note's never going to exist, but racism will.
Yeah. And that is, I think, another very important and good point, right? Is that Death Note was written in what, 2002, maybe it started, 2004 or something like that? A long time ago, where these issues were less talked about, less front and center, less politically charged the way they are now. This coming out in the year of our Lord 2024 is insane. Like, I wonder if, like, I don't know how this got past editorial staff, unless the editor also agrees with the stuff on the page. Like, maybe there is some grand plan. I have heard a lot of arguments against kind of the things that I'm saying, where like there's a grand plan, or maybe the aliens really are evil. It's like, I get that, but man, it's wild to me that you can publish something like this and have a massive reaction from, I saw a lot of reactions on the internet.
Oh, you do know, like, the aliens being evil is the worst case situation for the story.
It actually kind of is, yeah.
Because if the aliens are evil, the author is essentially saying the main characters are right in being racist, because they were bad guys all along.
If the aliens are the bad guys, it is you are affirming they are sending us their deplorables or whatever
your suspicions on minorities have been true all along.
Yes, yeah, yes. You think minorities are bad people and are here to take your stuff and be bad things, and you're right, because the aliens are here to do the same thing. You're right. That would be bad.
That would be bad. So anyone who's saying it's like there's a grand plan, the aliens are evil, is like, oh, that sucks if that is the grand plan, you know? That's not a good grand plan.
So then let me ask you this. We won't belabor the series too much more. Is there a path forward where this series
makes sense
and is not a piece of xenophobic propaganda?
Yeah. So do we have any chapter two in here?
I think I did. Yeah, I had some chapter two. Yeah, so we got the wreck. Is there anything specific?
Okay. So I'll just give us a synopsis. The guy, I forgot his name again. He pukes. Yeah, he got me.
look at this fucking page, man. I don't know.
He's like, oh, my neighbors are aliens. I think they're criminals. The neighbors are showed up to complain about like normal.
Yeah, those are like the ceilings are too low in this apartment we all live and share.
Yeah, our apartment sucks. Don't you agree? Can you sign a petition to make it better? And they smell like the body of the other alien that they just ate. And as you go into the chapter, whatever the fucking guy's name is, he kills five random aliens on the street.
In a really cool panel. Like, and again, I think the art in this is really, there's this really neat thing where there's a flashback and he goes, here I go, I can erase it in one slash. And then like him as a child, like erases these four guys, and it's a cool little series of panels. I'll give him that. So.
And this is why I think that the intent is that these are the evil guys, because this is not a face of a hero. And him seeing the alien blood on himself in his reflection, finding himself to be unrecognizable in a way, or like not what he thought he would be, is kind of what I got from this page. But that's not it. It's more so that Namamoto eats the five aliens raw. Not a very heroic thing to do. I don't see how, even if you align with these characters, that can be seen as like a chill thing.
There's just so many dog whistles in this series, Gautam. Like, when
there are,
like,
there are.
This is like the, like, oh, if we drive off some of these immigrants, maybe the rest of them will stop coming to our town. Like, small towns in the part of the country that we live in do this, Gautam. Like, this is a real thing.
But on top of that, they go even more radical in that at some point they say, but we don't want them to run away because they want to kill all of them. Yeah. And at the end, we get, presumably, our
antagonist, but not our villain, right? This would be our antagonist to our leads, who would actually be the good guy in this case, right?
And this is a funny joke, actually, because
I actually like this like on the right.
Yeah, this is a good joke. The mom was like, look to the right. And the little boy looks to the right. He's like, yeah, it's a good job. Now look to the left. And he sees this dude violently puking on the street. And the mom's like, hey, what are you going to do if left becomes a source of trauma for him?
Yeah.
And the boy's like, I'll never turn left again.
Yeah.
It's a good gag. Kind of random, but it's good.
You point out something interesting that gave me some new thoughts. Him sort of looking at himself here and like maybe regretting. And to be honest, like, it's not made super clear, but I think this is like, he just basically murders five of these aliens. I think they're teenagers, because one of them is talking about like, oh yeah, I couldn't get my driving license or something. He just basically murders him in cold blood. And he seems like, I don't know if he necessarily regrets it, but he feels a little disturbed by it, I guess you would say, in these panels.
Yeah.
Whereas Namamoto,
she's a psychopath.
Who has been much more racist, I will say, that most of the racist dog whistling in chapter one was from her mouth. And I want to say, no, this is him saying this. So they both said some bad stuff.
I think this guy is the only, but if one of the two are going to be salvaged from this story,
it's the guy.
If it's the guy.
Yes.
Even though he's the murderer of the group, they gave him understandable backstory on why he wants to kill all the aliens. Namamoto doesn't have that. Namamoto is just psychopath. Yeah.
But she also doesn't kill people, or she doesn't kill the aliens, like, and he does. So, like, he is committing a much worse act than, like, I mean, Edie is weirder.
She's encouraging it, right? She's spurring him on, and she is cannibalizing them. And we can talk for days about whether it's cannibalism or not. I think it is, if you think about fantasy settings, like eating sentient creatures. I
mean, yeah, these people are, the aliens here are presented as, they're people. They look different, but they're people. Like, they're walking, they're wearing clothes. This guy's on a skateboard.
Exactly.
They're just people, right? Like,
we'll just call it cannibalism and move past it. But it's like, she has no reason to hate the aliens. It's vague and obtuse. Yeah. She's the crazier of the two, for sure. And less redeemable, because she has no motive. It's just blind hatred, right?
And it's only chapter two, so maybe things change. But yeah, it just, maybe there's a place where Kitami, you know, realizes he's been doing bad stuff, and he, you know, goes on to get, maybe not redeemed, but, you know, maybe he changes his mind and she doesn't, because she just thinks they're so delicious and doesn't have it, you know, hates them for no reason. But like, man, there's just still dog whistling all over this series, and I don't like it. I just don't like it, man.
Well, let's read chapter three, because we have our drunk detective
on the scene. This is the potential redemption for this series, is, okay, if we see this drunk detective, and if he's a foil to our characters, and he's presented as, oh, this guy's on the right side of everything, you know, he, you know, under, you know, protects the aliens and understands, you know, that they bring good stuff, or maybe at least thinks like, oh, you know, like, yeah, they came fast, it's a little weird, but they're okay. Like, we need this guy to be our foil to our characters, and we need the story to reinforce that he is correct and the good guy, right?
Can I tell you my gut feeling on how he'll be written?
Go for it.
I have a feeling he'll be like, yeah, you know what? I hate the aliens too, but you can't go murdering people.
I have a bad suspicion that will also be how it is. I have a suspicion that this is actually going to be our character who is like our, like, what would you call him? Like our, he's an investigator of some kind, right? So I think that he's going to be the one to like, oh, he's going to uncover the truth of the world, which is that the alien, you know, there was no meteor and the aliens are bad. They were trying a peaceful invasion. That's my biggest fear. I think that's what this character is going to be, but I don't know. We'll see. This is, I am not encouraged by what I have read in the series so far, because again, like I said, if I thought this was some like, oh wow, this is immaculate storytelling, I can see hints of X, Y, and Z, and you know, there's this and this, this just kind of seems like a straightforward kind of, you know, weird gonzo, you know, action thing. Like maybe not even an action thing, like a weird, you know, dramatic, like, I don't even know how to classify this. It's just this weird sci-fi xenophobia story. Like that's kind of what it is.
Yeah, it, literal xenophobia. At least we got this panel of him puking on the street and traumatizing a child.
Yeah, this page on the right is actually really funny.
It's a genuinely good joke, but anyway.
Yeah. Okay, is there anything else we need to say about Drama Queen?
No, I think we said it all.
Cool. I would say get in the comments, but you know what? Don't leave us comments on this one. Or
I'm a little bit worried.
I'm a little concerned about the comments we might get on this, but... Yeah, I'm concerned about this series. It's concerning to me so far. I want it to not be the way I feel about it, but every hint I've seen seems to say that this author just thinks the way that the lead characters do in some way. So I don't know.
I think the opposite of you in that regard, but I think I'm also giving it a charitable read, and I'm not fully sure. So we'll see, right?
Yeah, you're playing devil's advocate, which makes you the kinder person in this.
I don't know if it does. I don't know if I'm being kinder. I'm being charitable right now, but I could very well be wrong.
Yeah. How many chapters do we give this to change our mind and show us that it's not just a xenophobic guy writing this weird thing where aliens get killed?
I don't know. I thought this would have been cleared up in chapter two, but
I hope so too, but it wasn't. I'll give it a volume. I mean, I don't know. After a certain amount of time, if it's not cleared up, right? Like this, again, I think that this new character has a chance to clear things up. I think seeing more of their point of view or who they are, what kind of character they are, might either solidify it as this is just xenophobic drivel out of Japan, or, oh, okay, maybe they're going for some kind of, you know, different redemption, telling us how bad it is.
Maybe this is just a racist battle royale. Who knows?
Yeah. Okay. As people were comparing this, do you remember that story? Okay. I'm going to have to go find it in our conversation. I sent you that other series that people were saying like, oh, this reads just like this other really xenophobic series. And I sent you the opening pages of it. Tokyo. Yeah. What was it called? I'm going to find it. It's in our conversation here. It was like Tokyo Alien something.
Tokyo Shinobi Squad or something.
Tokyo Shinobi. Yeah. What was that called? I'm going to find it.
I never read that.
Tokyo Shinobi Squad. Yeah, let me. So for reference, people were comparing the series to Tokyo Shinobi Squad. This is the opening. I think the opening like two or three pages of Tokyo Shinobi Squad. The year 2049, Tokyo, the city is now the greatest center of crime in the world. It all started 20 years ago. When they opened up this giant thing and brought in a bunch of people, they connected Japan with Russia, China, the USA, super globalization were brought about. Basically, they're saying, hey, we invited immigrants into our country, massacre, slums, terrorist groups, diffusion of business, organized crime and violence spread like disease to transform Japan into a lawless nation. Anyways, it was interesting that people were comparing to that. I definitely see a lot of the similar things. The Tokyo Shinobi Squad seemed a lot more on the nose. It also came out a couple of years ago, I guess, but yeah.
It's kind of hilarious how that's the opposite of the theme of Wano in One Piece, where isolationism is portrayed as a bad thing, right? Mm. And opening your borders is portrayed as a much better option.
Yeah. Well, Oda is also an extreme left-wing socialist, nearing, like, the entirety of One Piece, which I guess... Let's talk about One Piece.
It's a perfect transition, right? Yeah.
It's a perfect transition. The entirety of One Piece is essentially about freedom and removing slavery and removing oppression and all of these things.
And that, systems of oppression.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Systems of oppression. I mean, Fishman Island is one of, is like, it's not my favorite arc in One Piece, but it is an absolutely like kind of gorgeous take on racism. And I mean that not in a, racism is still bad. Look at a gorgeous portrayal of how racism is bad and bridging the gaps between, like, I think the scene in One Piece of,
the transfusion.
Yeah. The blood transfusion at the end of Fishman Island is like, that's beautiful. That's one of my favorite moments in One Piece. I don't even like the arc. That might be my least favorite arc in One Piece, but like, it is an absolute, like, that's absolutely Oda telling you, like, these fishmen are racist. People are racist against these fishmen. That is their problem. Luffy bridges that gap. Like, that's what the story is about. So,
yeah, I'd agree. It's a weaker arc, though. I like Fishman Island, but yeah. it's a weaker arc because of the villains and like the central conflict, not because of the themes.
Yeah. And some of the pacing stuff, like, it's not. Yeah. The theme is still ever present.
Theme is great. Anyway, enough about society. We live in one. We all know.
Yeah.
Onto One Piece.
We live in a society. How can you complain about society when you live in it, Gautam? That's my question. You participate.
As my hero, the Joker said in Joker 2, we certainly do live in one.
We live in. So this is chapter 1133 called Nice Things, which, to be honest, this is one of the nicest One Piece chapters. Like,
it was so sweet.
And it's sad at the start, right? We start with this with flashback of Robin. We get kind of quickly going through her final days on I'm losing the island.
O'Hara.
O'Hara, yeah. Her final days on O'Hara with her mother and with the character we meet at the end again. And how she's basically constantly on the run. It's, everyone has said, like, oh, I saw her, you know, she's constantly being scared. You know, people are presenting her as scary when she's literally just a little girl. We have Saul here kind of telling her, like, listen, Robin, you're all alone right now, but someday, without a doubt, you will meet friends, which is like this, again, another big thematic thing of One Piece is the found family of the Straw Hat crew. And Robin has clearly found her place.
I think it's like, Oda's just so good. Because, yeah, like, even in, like, the page before, right, the people who are exiling her, saying, I wish she was just dead, she'd get out of here,
yeah,
can't sleep. It's like, they are all portrayed as scared, you know? Because, I mean, like, all this hatred does stem from fear, ultimately. And it's like, I think Oda understands this, like, cyclical nature of violence, fear, and hatred so well. Because I see other things that you could portray racism and hatred as just malicious, but it never is portrayed that way in One Piece. It's malicious, but it's like based on fear, ultimately.
Yeah.
And the next page is Robin saying she's scared, right? Of everyone else.
Yeah, everyone's like, which shows us in the, you're exactly right. The page before shows everyone is scared of Robin. And here Robin literally says, everyone scares me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, it's chapter opens with this flashback of Robin, kind of her run when she was younger. We get back, we're on Elbaf, which has been a really fun introduction to the arc.
It's been a blast, hasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. The start of the arcs are kind of usually harder for me. I think it's just, I don't know, with over 1,000 chapters, like, the start of Egghead didn't grab me quite as much. I like Elbaf maybe a little bit more so far, but Egghead turned out to be like an amazing arc by the end of it. So
it's just like One Piece is very different from the previous arc at the start of every arc, so it's kind of like a system shock getting thrown into the mix, and then you get used to like the setting.
And it's also like I wasn't gonna say, like, we've been like, when was Elbaf first mentioned? It's in like chapter 110 or something. It's like 1,000 chapters ago we heard about Elbaf. And
this is like finally, in the garden. This is before Alabasta is Elbaf being mentioned. It's where they meet Ginny and Dory.
Yeah, yeah. Brogy
and
Brogy and Dory. Right? Yeah, Brogy and Dory. Yeah, who took them on?
I don't know.
They're on this ship, right? Yeah.
I don't know.
No, they're not on this ship. This is the new giant pirates who.
Oh,
they were on the other big ship that brought them from Egghead to Elbaf.
Right.
That had Frankie and Robin and the others on there.
Right.
Not the Luffy group who got separated, but yeah, that was Dorian Brogy's ship.
the OG group is the only one that got separated, which is interesting.
Like, yeah, I thought that was cool. Yeah, people talked about that. I thought that was cool that they basically got everybody. Yeah, the like original, I guess the East Blue group, you could kind of say. Although,
yeah, the East Blue gang.
Yeah, because Chopper wasn't in there. So it was just Usopp, Luffy, Nami, Sanji, and Zoro, right?
Chopper was in there. They found Chopper.
Was Chopper with him?
In,
okay.
Yeah, the rest of them minus Chopper met up. And then Chopper they found with all the other animals and...
Oh yeah, that's right. That's right.
In the house they lit on fire. Yeah.
Yeah, I like the new giant pirates. Another, I think they're cool. They seem fun so far. We'll see which one of them ends up being important. But also, I like what's her name?
Bonnie.
Yeah.
Bonnie's still with them.
Bonnie's still with
them,
and she's
too.
Like being a whatever. She's seven or something, right? Like being a kid again. I think that's cool. I think her. I think we see her. Yeah, we still have. Oh, which one is this? Lilith, right?
Yeah, Lilith.
I think it's Lilith. Yeah. So we still have Egghead. Vegapunk.
Vegapunk.
That's the name I was looking for. But yeah, it's cool. It's been great. Robin.
And Robin is so cute. She got her hair cut.
She got
by
her
Brooke.
Hair. Like I almost. So that's just like 2 weeks ago, maybe, or maybe last week, where she like cut her hair, and I almost was like. I think on the podcast we have to talk about this chapter because Robin has a new haircut.
I know. It was almost it's worth, so. It's such a sweet moment.
I love Robin because she's very like, when you first meet her, you're like, oh yeah, she's like a femme fatale. She's cool and she's like a, you know, she was part of the bad guy and she's has a huge bounty and she's super wanted. And then like, one of my favorite moments in One Piece is when they're on Zoe. And the artist guy is like drawing the really ugly dragon things. And Robin is just like, that's the cutest thing I've ever seen. And like that.
Yeah.
I love that for Robin. I think that's great.
And her, as she cries when the dragon,
when
like,
the dragon
fades
like
away.
Fades away. Yeah. It has a name. I don't remember, but it's so cute.
Robin also has some like out of pocket moments. Like, in Wano, they're like experiencing like really bad waves when they're trying to sail over to, whatever the Kaido's island is called.
Oniigashima.
That's and Usopp is like, wow, there's the weather's terrible. And Robin's like, I think it's the curse of all the dead babies that have passed away. And
she's so funny. I love Robin.
And Usopp's like, why would you even say that?
Yeah, Robin is great. I also have to say, like, I just we'll take a detour into how much we love Robin. I think Robin has the best series of moments happen around Ine's lobby and Robin. Like, I think her I Want to Live, like the kind of mirror to her I Want to Live is Nami asking for help. And that was the initial moment of One Piece that really grabbed me was we had to like the please help me or whatever. And Luffy's like, of course I will. That was the part that really grabbed me. And by the time I had gotten to Ine's lobby and Robin saying like saying I want to live and Luffy essentially sitting there and being like, I'm not going to help you unless you ask for it. Like literally staying there and being like, you got to say it. Like, I think they're on the roof at that point, aren't they?
Yeah, they're on the roof.
With
they,
the coolest
they showed,
lineup shot of all time.
The best lineup shot. And the second best lineup being the one in Nami's place in Arlong Park. But I think that's the best moment of the series. Truly.
Yeah. Well, that's a hyper low res version of it, but
yeah,
it's that one. Yeah, I can find them
because they put themselves at risk and they fought their way all the way there just to give Robin the choice. And like Robin's moment was so emotional and powerful. But the fact is that they gave her a choice after like fucking putting their lives on the line to get there. It's like that's so cool.
Yeah, this is I will fight that this is maybe the greatest lineup shot. It's definitely my favorite lineup shot in all of One Piece, and it happens around Robin's. But this is where they're waiting for her to say she wants to live. I think, right? Isn't that what's happening here? So yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But too bad Usopp wasn't there. But
yeah, I know he was somewhere. I don't know where he was, but he comes back after that. But
I know.
Yeah. So all of this to say that Robin is a part of potentially my two of my top 10 moments in One Piece of all time. I think she's awesome. I think she's cool. And this has been a long time coming. This to me kind of completes her, an arc that started with her way back in Alabasta, right? Like, which in Alabasta, we don't really get her history. It's more, Water 7, Ine's Lobby, but we start hearing about O'Hara and stuff around the time she joins the Straw Hat crew. So,
yeah. And it's like, Robin is a very mature person. Definitely like the mature part of the group, right? Head on her shoulders and whatnot.
She's the mom for sure of the Straw Hats.
Oh, for sure. Because the rest of them are children. Yeah. But it's nice seeing her have her moment of childishness, right? Mm-hmm. Like, because this is like the part of her childhood that still exists.
Yes, yeah, so this is literally the only connection left to O'Hara that she really has, which is why it's like so touching.
Such a big
deal. It's Robin's moment. But Saul is here. They said like, oh, he collapsed and we don't know. He tries to scare her. And yeah, I don't know. This is just like, it's like, what a shocker.
And this is how they first met, right? Is Saul tries to scare Robin as a child.
So I didn't remember that. Yeah.
It didn't work. Yeah.
Because I should have gone back and read those flashbacks, because the O'Hara flashbacks are good ones. So, but yeah.
So this is just his icebreaker.
Yeah.
Yeah. As he mentioned. Yeah.
Yeah. And then this, I don't know. It's just like so much good shit happens here. It's so fluffy and positive. It's awesome. He's like, I want to hear nice things about how he's like, don't tell me about all the sadness. Like, tell me like congratulate me for being alive. Tell me bless you for being alive 22 years. And she's just like thinking about like, I was like, oh, she wants to die. She's like, I missed you so. And like, Oda is the greatest at drawing crying characters. It's amazing. It's like,
yeah,
because
it's
so
always
too
messy. It's always messy crying.
Yeah. He's like, they look uglier when they cry, which is what real crying is like.
Yeah, exactly. And I love the crying is usually reserved just for Franky because he's the sobbing mess, but everyone is the sobbing mess except for Luffy, who's happy for him.
Yeah, it's funny because we see Luffy cry a couple times, but like, it's so cool. Like, man, I don't know. One Piece does so much cool stuff. Like, everyone else is so sad and Luffy smiling. Like, that's, I don't know, man. It's great.
Yeah, because
it makes total
moment sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's, I don't know. Like, and Luffy has happy cried, but like only once, maybe, like when Sabo was alive, right?
I think that might be the only,
and that's
time
like one of
that
the best. Yeah, that's like one of the best happy crying faces. Like,
yeah,
I remember. And yeah, but anyways, yeah,
Luffy passed up on eating food to make to show up for the meeting,
which is like we didn't mention that, but that's a big fucking deal. That is an enormous deal. Like, eating food for Luffy is second only to like being the Pirate King. Like, as far as priorities, like that's it.
It's funny because Luffy is like all impulse incarnate.
Yeah,
you know. So this is a big moment for him.
I guess now we see that clearly. His priorities, which I think we could have known. It's like, number one is being the Pirate King. Number two is his crew, and number three is eating meat. And this is like reinforced that in a positive way.
I think it might even be crew, Pirate King, food.
It might be. I wonder if he's ever faced with that in the future.
Go ahead and state your piece, because
I was
going to
go off on another like kind of different question.
Oh, thing, me too. So. I was going to talk about Loki.
Okay. Well, before you get to Loki, let's do mine, because I want to talk about Saul while he's here on the page.
Yeah.
It's pretty clear, I think, that Saul is the man marked by fire.
100%.
So that means that Law is coming after him. Kid is coming after him. I think Shanks knows him or is coming after him or something, right?
Well, like, I don't know how much Law and Kid are coming after him.
They know that he has some kind of important information, which maybe is just O'Hara. I'm wondering if what the info he has or why he's so wanted or what the importance of Saul is. Importance of Saul is?
I think both him and Robin have forbidden knowledge.
Is that all it is? I guess that they, well, and
we,
I think
we don't know more on, because Saul, of course, that is the reason he's wanted, but man wreathed in flames, you don't get a moniker just for being, I guess, like the fact is like, he wasn't wanted at the same time as Robin was. He was recently, his name shot up in the rankings. So that must mean people either thought he was dead and suddenly found out he was alive, or he had made waves somehow.
Good point.
So I'm curious as to what he did to get on the radar.
Yeah, and I do think that because in Egghead we got so much revelation of the Void Century, kind of. I guess not the Void Century, but like the pre-Void Century, maybe? That kind of era, right? The ancient times.
Right.
And the Rising Tides and all this stuff. I'm thinking that one of the last pieces of the puzzle, or a piece of the puzzle here for the kind of history of the One Piece world, is whatever knowledge Ohara had. Because, I mean, the thing about Ohara is that it had text about what happened during the Void Century, right? Like, that's its thing.
Yeah, so, exactly.
And I don't...
It was like everything on the Void Century.
Yeah, like I think it just had like the history of the Void Century in Ohara. So then do we think Saul just has that knowledge because he was there and read those books? Do we think Robin has that knowledge? It kind of was implied to me that Robin never read those books specifically. She was from Ohara and they destroyed it because it had the knowledge. But to me, Robin doesn't have the knowledge of the Void Century, or if she does, she's just not talked about it ever for whatever reason. I don't think she does. Maybe.
I think she does. Because that's why they're after her, because she's like the last remnant of the knowledge, right?
Yeah, well, and she can read the language, which is important, so.
Exactly. I think she has to an extent. It's just that the Straw Hat crew doesn't care about it.
That's also probably true. Is that like, it's really important to us as readers, and the Straw Hats, they don't really care. Like,
yeah. Like, it's, Luffy especially does not give a shit.
Yeah, Luffy definitely doesn't care. Like, he will probably fall asleep. Like, my prediction for the next chapter or two is that Saul and Robin expound and give us a lore dump, and Luffy sleeps or eats. Like, probably.
I'm pretty sure there was like a scene where Luffy was talking about his dream with Robin, and Robin was like about to lore drop something, and I'm forgetting what it is, but Luffy. Yeah.
He was just like, haha, never mind. Robin was like, haha, never mind, I'll save it.
Yeah, I'll save it, because Luffy clearly isn't interested.
Well, and that also connects, and I want to get to Loki next, but that also kind of connects to during the 2 year, 4 month or whatever, the time skip, Robin spent time with the Revolutionary Army, where I think that she probably gave the information she has on the Void Century to Dragon and the Revolutionary Army. So I feel like we bring this up every year we talk about One Piece. Like, is the Revolutionary Army, is Dragon going to finally fucking do something? Are they finally going to be involved in Elbaf?
No.
Yeah, I don't think so either. So maybe after. Maybe after.
Yeah, maybe after. I don't know. Maybe they'll pull in revolutionaries just like they did in Gladiator arc.
Yeah. Is the final Poneglyph on Elbaf? Is that what we're here for?
Yeah, I believe so. It's on Elbaf.
Okay. So then is this the last arc before the end? Like the last arc before things, like the end is going to be long. Don't get me wrong. Like, I think it's going to be 4 or 5 years of the end, but
this is the last MacGuffin for sure.
I think so. Right. Cause we talked about this when we talked about Egghead earlier in the year, but Egghead answered a lot of questions for us. And we're definitely in the phase of make up more questions to be asked. We're answering questions. So yeah, I think it's Elbaf and then Endgame, like, whatever Endgame is.
No, I agree. I think that's how we go about things. And I'm here for it. Elbaf has been great so far.
Yeah, it's been good.
What a fun start.
So yeah, talk to me about Loki and what you're feeling about it, because that's an interesting thing.
Okay, Loki is evil. Change your tree with Sea Stone. There is more to him than him just being evil, I feel, of course. Yeah. But he did say, if you let me go, I will erase one pirate crew from existence and nobody will know that you asked for this or that I did it.
Mm-hmm.
And that implies that he is very powerful, which is why he's also chained to Yggdrasil, the world tree.
Yeah.
But that paints him as a bad guy right off the bat. But he also calls himself the Sun God, mm-hmm. which we know is Luffy. Luffy doesn't know that, of course.
Yeah.
Which is kind of funny, but we as the audience know Luffy to be Sun God Nika incarnate. So what is Loki the Sun God of? Is he actually not the Sun God and the Trickster God like he is in mythology? I don't know. But either way, what we do know is that him and Luffy got off on a bad foot, but have made a deal, a secret deal that Luffy has agreed to. What is the deal, I wonder?
I saw a theory that I do not endorse, but I thought was interesting, where Luffy thought he had the gum gum fruit, and he doesn't. He has the mythical Zoan type Nika, right?
Right.
The theory is, what if Loki thought he had the mythical Zoan type Nika sun god and instead has the gum gum fruit. That I think that's fun. I don't know if I believe it. I read that and I thought, oh, that's interesting. It would be.
Oh.
The only thing is, I don't think that chains would hold him. Unless those might be sea stone chains, I guess. I don't know.
No,
he said
they're sea stone.
They are. Okay. Yeah. I thought that makes sense.
I don't think he does. Just because, I mean, it would be fun, but I also think it doesn't fit with Loki as a mythological figure.
Yeah, he is. The trickster god thing is definitely right. Yeah, I don't know. So who's the sun god in Norse lore is Heimdall? No. Some god Norse lore. Oh, Sully and Mani, the wolves, right? Who carry the
Yeah, one of the sun doggies. One of the doggies makes the sun come up, right? And the other one makes the moon come up.
Yes, yeah, something like they pull the sun and the moon. I don't know if they are the gods of the sun and moon. I don't know. Yeah, look, it's interesting.
It is very trickster god-esque because he's already trying to strike bargains, right?
Yeah, for sure. He's trying to make a deal. He's trying to trick Luffy into something. Does the fact that he is presented as a bad guy and a trickster and tied up right off the bat, does it make you think that maybe he is a good guy? Like, I feel like One Piece does that subversion a lot, right? Where it's like...
Makes me think he's a good guy, but... Moreover, what makes me think he's a good guy is that Luffy is striking a deal with him.
And yeah, Luffy doesn't seem to immediately be like, you're a bad dude, I don't like you. And Luffy's like take on character is almost always right. So
exactly. Like Luffy is a moron. He's an idiot. Yeah. But he has the best read on people.
His intuition into people is unmatched. So
exactly. Yeah. So I think the fact that Luffy's willing to strike a deal with this dude. Narratively, just even though everything states that he is a scumbag and an evil dude, I think Luffy's read on the situation is more accurate than anything else.
Yeah,
at least historically. So we'll see.
Yeah, obviously, I'm curious because if we get Loki, are we going to get is Thor going to be in this? Is who's the big god with the ravens? Who I'm forgetting.
Oh, Odin.
Odin, yeah. Are we going to get all of the mythical?
I don't know.
People in this, or is it just Loki? And yeah, so I don't know. It'd also be interesting if the giants are all major characters because they're very large, and I don't.
They
know,
are major characters.
Like, and I don't know if like can Sanji beat a giant if there is like combat, right? Like if the you know the big combat that happens during every arc, like
I think Sanji can, and I think Zoro can. And I
Zoro,
think Luffy
yeah.
Can.
Yeah,
I think those the big three of the Straw Hat crew plus Jinbei can probably beat Jinbei.
Yeah. Well, like to be honest, like Robin's devil form thing was fucking cool and made her really big, so that could be a thing, but
I don't know how strong Robin is. Like as in
we don't
I'm not
see
saying
her fight
she's
very
weak.
Often. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not saying she's weak at all. I'm not sure. Yeah. I have no idea. She's not really a fighter.
Yeah, although I did really like her fight in Wano.
Wano,
where she had the like awakened like giant thing. I thought that was really cool. But yeah, I don't know. I'm curious. Loki is definitely, I think, going to be the. I think Loki just strikes me as like the character, like in the way that there's always like sort of like one, like it's in.
Yeah.
There's kind of like one character who you're going with. He's either the character or he's the bad guy of the arc, right? Like so, Saul might be the character of this one. We'll see. But
I'm also curious as to how Lego Man. Sorts into all of this.
Oh yeah, the guy who captured him and built the little city or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. He also seemed
warden.
Well, and it seemed like the what were they called? The other giant crew. The new giant pirates were like going to he's like exiled and they were going to talk to him or something. Like I don't remember exactly what they were going to him for.
It already sets up an interesting situation though. They're called the new giant pirates, which. Means that they are new. They haven't been around for a while. But and the guy who captured the Straw Hats, when he captured them, they're like, yeah, they want to work with these tiny people. It's like, we're giants. We have our pride, you know? So there's already kind of internal political conflict between an old way of thinking and a new way of thinking. So
yeah,
I think
sure.
That factors into it in one way or another.
Yeah, good call.
Hopefully Bonnie has a good vacation, though.
Yeah, we probably don't see much of her until I think she maybe gets one fight in the end game and then that's probably it for her. But she got her, honestly, she got her resolution kind of with the...
Yeah, honestly, she just needs to, like, take her to, like, the amusement park or something.
Yeah.
And continue the rest of the arc. Let her have fun.
Yeah. Cool. Anything else about One Piece you want to talk about here with the Elbaf arc starting up?
No, it was sweet and touching.
Yep.
We'll talk about it next year, though.
This is a good, good chapter. Yep, definitely revisit it next year. Let's get to the news. There's a little bit of stuff in the news here. Kagurabachi is the number one manga for U.S. sales in November. And it got an anime announcement by Cygames is the studio there. Yeah, the most notable thing that they have done is Uma Musume, Pretty Derby Road to the Top, and Beginning of a New Era. And if you have not seen some of the animated scenes from those, that movie and that OVA, they are pretty freaking amazing. Like really, really outstanding. Let me see.
So I still haven't read more than like, I think two chapters of Kagurabachi.
Yeah.
What do you think of it right now?
Kagurabachi is a pretty good series. It reminds me of the quality of kind of early Jujutsu Kaisen where I thought like, yeah, this is pretty good. I also think that it's getting better, which is encouraging because we definitely talked about it last year when it premiered, and I've brought it a couple times this year to the podcast. And I think most of the times I mentioned it as I'd say like it's good, but not great. Right. It was kind of my take on it. And I think that the arc that finished before the one we're in right now, I think was the best arc. And then I think what's happening right now in the story is also some of the best stuff it's done.
That's awesome. That's good to hear.
So to me, it is getting better, or is at least coming into its own. That like, I'm not going to be like, it's great. Like it's amazing, but like it has some really sick fight sort of panels and staging and big, spreads and stuff. The art is cool. The magic system is pretty interesting with the powered swords and a couple of other things going on. To me, Kagurabachi is absolutely set up. And I think striking at the, like, this is the thing that the Demon Slayer and Jujutsu Kaisen fans are going to latch onto next. And I think it's right up their alley. Like, and I think it's probably better than both of those so far, although it's not obviously not as far actually, along.
Awesome. I should probably read, like, because it sounds like
it's easy.
I
mean, read. Yeah.
It doesn't need to be high art. If it's like achieving what it needs to within the scope of what it's trying to do, that sounds like sick.
So like,
it sounds like it's doing a great job.
Yeah. Like we're doing a Gachiako to read through, which is slowed down now cause we caught up. We were, one of the things we point out that's interesting is like, you know, we read 100 chapters of Gachiako and we're like, there's only really like 4 fights in that whole series in 100 chapters. Like not very many. Kagurabachi is on the opposite end of that, right? Like there have been 60 chapters of Kagurabachi and there's like 30 fights, like maybe not 30, but there's probably like 12 or 13. Like this is a fight that happens. So it's really more.
It's action.
Forward. It's really action forward. But that being said, I do one of the chapters I think I brought a couple months ago, the, kind of recruiting the second main character, his name is Hakuri, him. And there's this stuff with his dad and they both have this kind of power to like create a space and teleport things in and out of it. That whole arc was really great. And like some really beautiful art and panels. I think that the it's not perfect. One of the things that bothers me is that the character design of some of the kind of side or minor characters is like really kind of bland sometimes for me. I think it's really pretty good. I am encouraged that it is getting better. I hope that it does not drop in quality once the sort of anime pressure is turned on. I think this anime is probably coming out like maybe fall 25, probably 26 would be my guesses. But this is also maybe the earliest I have ever seen an anime adaptation announcement from a series, like maybe ever. I'm sure there have been some that are earlier, but like in recent memory, getting an anime announcement when you're 59 chapters in is pretty crazy. Like that's a year and a week of publication. Well, that's a little more than that. It's more like 14 months probably, but like 14 months of publication and Kagurabachi has an anime adaptation order. Like that's big.
Yeah, that is huge. Like we haven't even gotten Akane, right? Like it's
no, but I do think Akane is coming soon. So
Me too. Yeah. And that's like a trickier thing to do. I think it's easier to do like, because we don't even need to talk about it because we've talked about why it's hard to do Akane to death, but
Someone
like, I, it's going to be difficult. I hope they do it well.
Yeah, someone was like, oh man, you know who would be great at doing Akane? They're like, Kyo Annie. And I was like, yeah, don't. They won't, but that would be great. They really should. That would be maybe the greatest anime ever made of all time. I don't think they'll do that, but maybe, who knows? WSJ has a lot of money, so.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's up their alley, but I think this is too mainstream for them.
Yeah. So
they never do these types of work.
Yeah, generally. But yeah, Kurobachi, it's good. I mean, I think you should read it. It's a super easy read. It's just kind of action packed. It's a very typical battle shonen, but it's a very good version of it. And again, I think it's getting better. Like, people really liked the first major bad guy in the series, who I thought was like kind of lame. Like, I really didn't like him very much, even though he had a cool sword. Like, I think that the series has only gotten better since then. And it's really easy to read, like, week to week. It's really good. I think that I think this most recent arc, they're doing some really like actually interesting type of things in it, like actually kind of making some cool story decisions and some interesting lore things. The main character is literally like Batman with a katana, which is cool. It's cool. I don't know. It's one of those things. It's like, yeah, this is, it bleeds cool. It's Rule of Cool. It's Rule of Cool. It has great, great art and action paneling and design and stuff.
Just so we can at least bring it to these, because our podcast discussions, it has to align on, usually it aligns on something we both read, and it's like harder to talk about something that we both haven't read because there's no discourse, right? It's a one-way description, and it's so much easier to talk about stuff we both read. So I'll catch up on Kagurabachi so we can chat about it here.
Yeah, for sure. And I think my warning to you is that the first bad guy is, I did not like him that much. And that first arc is just okay. And then I think it just gets better after that. So yeah, I mean, I think this is a big series. Again, I think this, if it's animated well, will be the next sort of like big thing. Like it's already a big thing in Japan and here. Like, I mean, like the thing I read, Kagurabachi was the number one best-selling manga in November, which is pretty crazy in the US.
Right.
So
yeah, that is insane. That's crazy numbers.
Yeah. Okay. More news. Kazuki Yaoi, which is the voice actor of Frankie, retired this week, from doing voices, from doing Frankie. I don't know if we know who his replacement yet is, but,
we do.
Yeah. This is going to keep coming up. These people, the One Piece voice actors are getting old. So.
Yeah. Yeah. It happens. He was, looking like a sicker in photographs apparently.
Well, and didn't was it him who had like throat cancer from smoking or mouth cancer?
That was Ivankov's voice actor.
Oh, okay. I was gonna say, I know there was somebody.
I'm almost positive because they replaced them.
Okay.
But yeah, that's sad to hear.
Yeah, sad to hear. But I mean, I think going out on his own terms is better than you know, like
for sure,
like passing and you know, or just being like, oh, I can't do it anymore. People being like, wow, his voice sounds bad, you know, for a year or two. Like, I think just going out on his own terms is probably good. Yeah, it's a very unique voice. Not the voice that I had when I read One Piece primarily. I still only read One Piece. So I had not heard Frankie's voice actor until I had read, you know, 400 chapters of him. And I was like, wow, that is not.
It did not sound.
No, yeah, my voice for Frankie in my head is, it sounds like Johnny Bravo. That's always what I thought Frankie sounded like. And then that's not what the Japanese voice for Frankie sounds like.
Problem is, I like watched One Piece so long ago that everything flows together in my head to where I don't remember what my initial imagination's voice for characters were.
Yeah.
But I could definitely see that. He is a very Bravo-esque character, especially with his hair.
Especially early on in Water 7, right? He's kind of...
When he had the pomp. He had the pompadour.
Yeah, the pomp, and he's aloof, and he just seems like a big, strong man, and yeah, so...
And he had the sunglasses, and he had the speedo. Yeah. Like, I mean, he just was very Johnny Bravo-esque.
It's Johnny Bravo. Yeah, so I was like, okay, yeah. Well, his voice in my head is Johnny Bravo now. But to be honest, like, as I've seen more and more of the anime, his voice has changed. So I hear him more. I hear him more like the voice actor now. So,
yeah, it kind of melts together if you've like consumed something long enough.
Yeah, for sure.
Anyway.
Cool. More news. Fire Force Season 3, Part 1 trailer. Baby, I am ready. People.
Did they confirm David is on this?
I think so. I think they are. If it's not, okay. I think it's David, or if it's at least the same like director and stuff of the last season. So, this is, man, a warning for you specifically, Gautam, and also for any of our watchers, listeners who have not read Fire Force. you've got about 18 months to read Fire Force before you are going to be spoiled when the anime finishes on potentially the greatest manga ending of all time.
Is this the last season?
This is part one of the last season. So there will be a part one, there'll be a part two. I assume part two will be in about a year, maybe a little more. I'm assuming 18 months. So yeah, you've got somewhere 12 to 18 months to read Fire Force before you people will start spoiling you on, again, like I said, potentially the greatest manga ending of all time.
Really?
I mean, I've read and finished a lot of manga, and the ending of Fire Force is so good. It has stuck with me for years. Like it legitimately is one of the greatest endings of a story. Like it for lots of different reasons. And you do not want to be fully spoiled on it. Like if you don't have to be, and you're sort of in the anime manga space, try to read it and not be spoiled on it. It's, I know it's long, but it's a super easy read. Like Fire Force just flows, man. If Fire Force is like Kagurabachi, where it's like, it's really all just fights, but it's so well choreographed and so well thing. It's all just like, Character moment, fight. Like it's very, very good.
Hey, you know, Okubo knows how to write characters.
Yeah, he's a goat. I hope he comes back and does something else. But he might be retired. Yeah. I don't know.
Fire Force not.
Yeah.
More like Soul Eater not.
Yeah. Well, no spoilers, but
no spoilies.
No spoilies, but Fire Force has ended, so don't get spoiled on that. Be hyped for that. The anime is really well animated. We have a bunch of one shot coming out that are interesting here. We have a one shot from the Mama Yu Yu creator Yoshihiko Hayashi titled Doku Ohaku. That's gonna be in Jump Giga Winter, so that came out that'll be coming out in January. We got a new there's gonna be a one shot from the Claymore creator Yagi Nobuhiro titled Shell and Night. That'll be cool. Claymore is a classic and a very cool series.
Yeah, Claymore is great.
Yeah. And then the Promised Neverland author Kaiyu Shirai and Ana no Mushina creator Amano Yoichi publishing a noir one-shot titled Apple in WSJ. That's coming out this week. We did not get that translated, but probably someone will fan translate it hopefully in the coming week. That's a big one.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah.
That'll be interesting, too.
Yeah, we're kind of, I guess, in one-shot season. I'm interested in some of these. Yeah, we'll see.
And I like all three of those authors, so it's like...
Yeah, I mean, they all three have solid things under their belt. I was not the biggest fan of Promised Neverland, but the opening arc of Promised Neverland is maybe the best first arc in any shonen series of all time.
You know, it's funny you mentioned, it's like, I'm not the biggest fan of any of those three manga, including Claymore, but they all had their moments where I thought, this is awesome.
Yes. Yeah, for sure. The opening of Promised Neverland, yeah. I think Mama Yu Yu had definitely had its moments, even though it was, you know, never really grabbed me, but that author definitely has potential. The paneling in Mama Yu Yu was awesome, so I really want to see more of that.
And I thought like the first 100 chapters of Claymore before it turned into like this eldritch horror was like very good.
Yeah, I've only watched the anime, but I remember liking it a lot when I was 19. So
yeah, it's like the closest thing to Berserk.
It literally isn't Berserk. Yeah. Like the closest kind of grimdark series to Berserk is Claymore. It's basically Berserk with girls. Like it's kind of not exactly the same, but it's kind of similar. Let's see, the last thing, Koei Horikoshi in an interview says he wants to start a new series as soon as possible. He says he would like to take on the artist role only, like we have talked about for years and years on this podcast.
Yep.
Let that man just be an artist. And
we have said from the start.
Yeah, and Shueisha told him it's best if you did it all, and I wrote, fuck you, Shueisha. Let the man be an artist.
Fuck these people. Dude, they have the shackles around his goddamn legs.
Yeah.
Give the guy a few months off, first of all. Let him do the fucking art.
Here's the thing that kind of blows my mind is I would think that like video game companies and anyone doing like gacha cards or any kind of like things that are about visual design of the characters, Hori, in my opinion, is on a level of like of Toriyama, right? Like Toriyama did Dragon Quest, he did the Chrono Trigger. He did a ton of these like character design video game things, and he's like really well. Those are like really unique and individual. Like I think Horikoshi could make a living doing that, where you would be like, oh cool, here's this new JRPG with characters designed by Kohei Horikoshi, and you'd be like, wow, they look sick. Like his art is amazing, as we mentioned. I think his character design is the best. I think he's like one of the best ever, like as far as character design. Like
I think he has a lot of similar DNA with Kubo of Bleach fame mm-hmm. as well. Yeah. And their series kind of progressed in the same way where they had very strong starts and petered off. But
he's a better artist than Kubo ever was or is, like, I think.
But Hori and you're right, he definitely is. But Hori and Kubo are both phenomenal character designers.
Yeah.
And they know their drip very well too.
Definitely. So there's, if we're doing like a split evolution, like there's Tite Kubo, and his drawing his characters with cool modern drip clothes splits off into Dandadan. And then his just designing good characters in their world fantasy thing splits off into Kohei Horikoshi of like, so yeah, that is the influence there.
See, what me and Bruce were talking about when we read this article, we're like, if the world was just and Jump had any brains at all, you would give Horikoshi the art of Hunter x Hunter.
Oh yeah, I forgot we talked about this.
And give Togashi the reins on the writing yes. and make them a team.
You would literally you would literally
just...
He's
a money printer.
God, yeah. Imagine, and then I said this when we were talking, imagine the amount of money you make on the first volume of Hunter x Hunter drawn by Horikoshi. Now, like, we know
that
this is never going to
so
happen.
Nuts.
Togashi's not going to give up his baby, we understand, but, like, that would be sick. And I think Horikoshi probably likes Hunter x Hunter. He probably, like, still reads it, I would imagine. That's, like, a thing for, you know, it's been going on for 400 years or whatever. So,
and Togashi would never accept it. I know this is cope. We both know this is cope.
Like, imagine, yeah.
Just imagine.
Imagine the amount of money and popularity you would get by being like, Kohei Horikoshi of My Hero Academia is drawing Hunter x Hunter until its end. And then, like, the first volume you publish with his art in there with like a Horikoshi cover. God, like, yeah, Togashi. The last cover of Hunter x Hunter, I think, is the worst manga cover I've ever seen, and I feel so bad.
No, dude, that's peak.
That.
That's peak. You just don't understand.
No, it is actually the worst cover I've ever seen.
So you see Gon punching the audience as he does in that cover is like deep symbolism for human nature,
like,
or something.
I need you to look at this. That.
You bring this up just to shit on it.
It came out this year, Gautam. This is this came out this year. This is a 2024 manga cover, and it's garbage. It's
the man
awful.
Is sick, Bruce. The man is
I
sick.
I know he is, but like, God, man, it's bad. Like, come on. And the problem is, like, if you go back even just like a couple of years, it's like, wow, these covers are great. These covers are awesome. The first cover he ever did for the series is better. Like,
I know.
You could have just, like, but this is better. This has a background. This has like shading and shit. I don't know. It's so just.
You should have seen this one in comparison to the painted cover he did of Kurapika in like watercolor. That's like beautiful and immaculate. It's like, this is like, you're right. This is dog shit in comparison to what Togashi has done.
Oh, is it the issue zero? Is it this one? Is it this one?
No, but that looks beautiful.
I'm looking through the covers now.
Okay, keep scrolling. God, he has some great
There's
covers.
Some good covers in here. Like, even the simple ones. Like, even this one, 24, is pretty good.
I love
good.
That one. Yeah.
Like, this is a good cover with the box in the back?
Yeah, okay, so it's 18 and 17 are the ones I'm talking about. Look at 17.
Yeah.
17 is like watercolor completely, and it looks great.
It's right open. Yeah. Yeah, those are great. Those are good covers.
Yeah, those look great.
They're really unique and interesting. Yeah, anyways, we rag on Togashi. I rag on Togashi every single week, so I won't go too far.
No, it's okay. It's always funny.
But yeah, they should absolutely give Hori any, like, what writer would you want to pair with Horikoshi? That was like a good shonen writer that didn't make it recently.
That's not Togashi, right?
Togashi.
I'd give him the guy who did the science stuff on Dr. Stone.
Oh, not Boichi's the artist, but yeah, the writer of Dr. Stone, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably.
Or maybe Obata from Death Note.
That would be good. But Obata's doing something. Isn't he doing Millionaire Game or Trillionaire Game? Or is that the other guy?
I don't think that's Obata, but he already has a partner, so that's unfeasible.
Maybe
we can give him Akka.
Yeah, well, I feel like we talked about that one too. Like, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't. I'm. I'm down on Akka stocks are down.
I know. Akka stocks are down.
I don't actually know if I want Akka to write anything else because
we're all a little bit mad at him right now. We're all a little bit miffed.
I don't know. I'm like, Isayama doesn't do anything, but I think that would be goated. Like, I don't know. Isayama has his own style that I also just like. So there's somebody out there, right? Like, give him, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know.
Give him, you know what? I'm going to give you a hot take.
What's that?
Give him George R. R. Martin.
Interesting.
He desperately doesn't want to write Game of Thrones, but he wants to keep writing.
Oh yeah.
Give him George R. R. Martin and let them make
I mean, you joke about it, but to be honest, I think Horikoshi might be the kind of guy that you could give like an adaptation to that would make it really good. Like a light novel or a novel or something. Like
Sure. And you know, like our favorite already does an adaptation. Why am I forgetting?
You're talking about Arslan?
Full Metal Alchemist.
Yeah.
Yeah, Arslan. Yeah.
Yeah. And Arslan's okay.
What's her name again?
Hiromu Arakawa.
Arakawa. Yeah. Yeah, Arslan. I'm talking about Arslan.
Yeah.
It's like, you can give Hori like a light novel work to adapt to.
And it'll be, maybe something like that'll happen. I don't know. I think that if they announce that he's coming back as writer and artist, I will be worried because I think that he just really struggled after the first 3 or 4 years of writing. So
the dude burnt out. It's
and he burnt out. Well, I think he struggled with writing and then burnt out. Like, I don't think those things actually happened at the exact same time, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's like, he said he wanted to only do the art clearly because that's the part he finds easiest and
he's
best
good at it and he's practiced it more and he's awesome at it. So yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
So I agree.
That's it for news. One more thing time. I am reading Brandon Sanderson's brand new book 5 of the Stormlight Archive, Wind and Truth. This is the end of the first major arc of the Stormlight Archives. This book is absolutely enormous. You can't see it, but they can. This is a very, very large book. I am almost halfway through.
What is Star-Lord doing right now in this post?
That is Dalinar Kolin. He is, I don't know what he's doing. He is taming the storm on top of Urithiru. I can't say much about it, of course, because it'll all be spoilers. I highly, highly, highly encourage people to go read Brandon Sanderson. I think he is an amazing author. I think he appeals to a lot of the same wants and needs that a lot of these like action shonen readers want. He's super good at it. The best action writer I think I've ever read. I've halfway through this book, I think two of the greatest fight scenes I have ever read in a novel. I think actually the two greatest fight scenes I've ever read in a novel are both in this book so far. He's beyond
interesting.
Amazing.
Okay.
In this particular novel, yes. I mean, I would say that virtually every best fight scene in a fantasy novel I've ever read is Brandon Sanderson, just because he's the best at it. And he writes a lot of them because he just kind of writes in that sort of high action type style. But yeah, I encourage anyone, if you're interested in Brandon Sanderson, go pick up Mistborn Final Empire. That's the book I think most people would be good at being introduced. If you don't want to read that one, I would say Tress of the Emerald Sea, or if you want a shorter thing, go read what is his short novel called? There's a lot of good ways to get into him, but
you know what? I have the Mistborn trilogy in plastic still. I plan to read it. I'll start her up. If anyone wants to start a book club, hit me up.
Bro, I will, no lie, I will do Mistborn book club with you.
You want to do it? Just for fun?
Dude, you are opening a door to Brandon Sanderson that you will not be able to close. But I'd absolutely do it. I love those
sure,
books.
Sure, let's talk about it after this. Yeah.
Yeah, we should talk about it. So I think, tell me about what you're doing, Gautam.
Yeah, so I played Reynad's game. The Bazaar. It is good so far. It is good.
Mm-hmm.
Better than I thought it would be. I didn't think Reynad had it in him. No slight to Reynad here. It's just that game making is hard. But it ended up being a very good game. I've only played like 4 hours of it though, so I've been mostly losing. So TBD on whether I think it has legs, but so far I think it does. It seems good.
I've played a lot of this game. This has been my go-to game the last, I don't know, month almost. I don't think anything has ever come close to hitting that sort of like Blizzard refinement style. But like this, if this game was released by Blizzard, everyone would be like, holy shit, this is the new best thing Blizzard has ever made. Like, it's that good, I think. It's not perfect, but it's really good.
I think they're doing themselves a disservice by having their own launcher. I think if this is on Steam, the marketing is built in.
Well, it's in early access, so it's not out yet. So it very well could be coming. There could be a Steam version coming. I don't know. I think that they should definitely sell on Steam. So maybe they're thinking about that. But it might just be that the launcher's for the early access or something. I don't know. But
I see.
Probably not. Either way. Because it's an account and stuff. But yeah.
Either way, I'm enjoying it. One other thing I've been doing is I tried Marvel Rivals out.
Mm-hmm.
It reminded me of why I hated Overwatch and why I hate hero shooters.
Yep.
This is an absolutely not representative of the major populace take. It is because people are having
fun. People like it. It looks fun. I mean, like, I'm with you. I played Overwatch for a little bit. It never really jammed with me. I thought it was okay. I don't really like that type of game, I don't think. And so I'm not going to play Marvel Rivals, but it looks good. If it's better than Overwatch and brings all those people back to gaming, then great.
I think, like, the hero shooters have legs. I think if people knew how to work together, this would be a fun experience for me.
Playing in a stack is much better than random queuing. Yeah, for sure.
Exactly. I like the randos that play run in like lemmings and die one at a time over and over again.
Yep.
And it's impossible to play as a group because nobody does, you know? So it's like if you play a healer, you are just there to die because nobody's watching you and chase down your teammates who are actively avoiding your heals.
Yeah, I was about to say, or you play a healer or you play a tank and you stand there and no one is helping you. Yeah, I played a lot of Reinhardt and D.Va in tanking.
Yeah, me too.
Which was, but there were actually two tanks when it was better, but yeah.
But this is, it's also important to remember that Marvel Rivals is like appealing to the Marvel crowd who haven't played multiplayer games, a lot of them, or aren't like the hugest gamers, but love the Marvel IP. And they're learning as they go. But for someone who is looking for like teamwork out of games, that's infuriating. It's not their fault, but it makes me enjoy the game less.
Yeah.
So I had no fun. And I
a positive for the game, I think, is that Overwatch has to like design characters from scratch and make them, and their releases have been pretty slow. Marvel has an infinite well of weird, zany characters that they can pull out of nowhere. Like, true. Oh, they want to design a character that does, you know, tar traps and flies and does this thing. They'd be like, there's probably a character in the Marvel universe that does that. And they've pulled in a couple of, you know, kind of lesser known characters. Like, I mean, Squirrel Girl is in it. Cloak and Dagger is one that, they're not super mainstream or popular.
Penny Parker is in it. Cloak and Dagger is like one of the more fun characters of the lineup. And I think they have a lot of good stuff going for them. I think the art design's great.
Yeah, it seems like it's pretty well designed. Like it's not for me, but like definitely it seems like a well-designed game. So
you're on the money. I think it's very much one of those things where it's not for me. I won't have fun with it, but someone who's new to the genre or someone who likes the genre will probably love it.
Yeah. Cool.
Anyway. That's about it.
Cool. I think that's it, unless you've got anything else, Gautam.
No, sirree.
All right, let's get out of here then. Hey, thanks again, everyone, for listening or watching. Don't forget to leave us feedback, comments, upvote, thumbs up, subscribe, all that jazz. Check out Twitter and Patreon, linked in the description. And thank you for being with us yet again this week.
Goodbye.
And don't forget to read more manga.